Welcome to the MMA Roadshow episode number 74 and a half. We are still in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. One of the most beautiful cities on the face of the earth. For UFC on Fox 21, Maia versus Conda, it is in the books. My name is John Morgan. Frosty beverages are being opened over here. There are various
noises being done
that may or may not have been picked up. Cold coffee is along with me. The young Mike Bond is with us as well. Listen, let's waste no time. We got no time. We got to go to the airport here in a little bit. So yeah. we can't mess around here.
I need some nap time.
I have so little time. I couldn't even mix my frosty beverage. The frosty beverage that we had left is just in a 2-liter bottle here of Canada Dry.
Well, I guess that's mixed.
It is mixed. But I couldn't get all fancy with it.
Yeah, you didn't put it in a glass with like ice. You just poured it straight into the 2-liter.
The Jameson directly into the remaining ginger ale of Canada Dry. And I sit here now with a 2-liter bottle of Canada Dry in my hand. And I mean, nothing says classy like the setup that I got going on right now.
Yeah, and you got a beer off to the side. That was a hefty little pour.
Well, I tell you what, you know who also did not have time to mess around tonight? Demi Amaya. Dude,
yeah.
How amazing is this? It was funny because I had picked Demi Amaya going into the fight. Mike, I know you had picked Demi Amaya as well. But never in a million years did I think, you know what? I bet he gets this thing done in about 2 minutes. I thought, honestly, maybe he'd get a submission late, or more than likely, he was going to have to, like, run out to an early lead on the judges' scorecards and then hang on for dear life
and get a
decision win.
Yeah, that's what I saw it going like, too. I didn't think it would be that quick. But I guess in retrospect, maybe it does make sense because we didn't know he gets tired later into fights, and especially a 5-round fight, we know that's where Condit thrives. So if you could get him down when they're both, you know, not very slippery from sweat, any of that kind of stuff, maybe that's when he capitalizes.
And as you pointed out to Carlos Condit earlier in the week, he has horrible takedowns. So is he so aptly appreciated?
It was the one takedown. I mean, that's all Demi Maia needed was legit one takedown, and he, you know, made quick work. He got to the ground, hit him with apparently a shot that hurt him from half guard, and then got into mount. Condit was hurt enough that he was willing to give up his back to Demian Maia, which is not something you want to do. But maybe he thought he'd be able to survive. I mean, Matt Brown survived for about 2.5 rounds with Demian Maia on his back for all but a few seconds of those rounds. So, yeah, he was clearly hurt. He gave up the back, and Demian Maia just sunk in that choke, and that was that.
Incredible it was. Mike, you spent the first part of the night back in the back with Cole Coffey. Then, of course, you were out there for the main card out on Press Row with me. Cole Coffey, not a huge media contingent. Let's just say it was a smaller media-attended show, so not
a
lot of
people
back there.
As I would call it.
Oh, just the high, that's
gathering.
Right. I like that. Just
the
highest
of high level of CBD media. No, just the there was not much media back there.
Well, talk about what was the feeling back there? I mean, so mainly it was probably
at that point we were really probably ready to strangle ourselves, because there was a sound guy that at that point, by the time we got the fight there, had been sound checking for an hour and maybe 10-15 minutes plus. Oh, it was wonderful. It was
so
wonderful.
So was he doing that whole
and then he had a guy helping him who was also a sound guy. So he had all these mechanisms in his mouth. How he would try to do these wow to try to evoke a fucking sound or whatever.
Are you serious?
It was the most bizarre. Just like how you guys freaked out at the
weigh-ins.
At the weigh-ins.
Yeah.
It was that times 10 because, one, we're trying to watch the fights, and it was a much, much smaller space. So, yeah, right when it was getting into the main event,
so enjoy it.
Well, it's amazing what you can black out or block out, whatever.
Oh, yeah, trust me. I know how much I've been able to black out over the years.
But how much you can block out if you really focus or whatever. So, no, there wasn't like a big exciting buildup because there was all this crazy stuff going on. They were swapping around the press room to do the different things. But we were still able to enjoy the fight. But literally, I think in the media at the point, it was just me and Casey from MMA Fighting were the only media in the press room for the time when the main event came down. And at that point, you know, it was over so quick. We were just kind of like, wow, you know, what just happened there?
Amazing, man. But, it was. I mean, watching it live, like the you know, he got it. You know, at first, Damian was just kind of baiting, hanging out. You know what he's going to do. Carlos knows what he's going to do. Everybody in the entire building knows what he's going to do. But he waits. He buys his time. He paws out the jab a little bit. He hangs out. And then he finally shoots in on that single leg. And right away, fair point to you, Mike Bond. I mean, I know that Carlos was kind of, you know, if you guys haven't seen the clip, it's pretty funny where he busts your balls a little bit because you were trying to ask him respectfully about it. But bottom line is the first takedown attempt, I should say, that Damian and I had, he got the fight to the floor. And it was, you know, it was a single and he pushed through it. It was great, you know, a great effort. And then once he got there, just complete control, as you said, you know, was able to get to the back. Carlos Condit tried to post and try to shake him off. Not going to happen with Damian Maya.
No.
He's right there on you. But it was just impressive. And then, you know, even once the choke was in, I thought, wow, this is pretty damn early. And it looked like it was bizarre because it looked like Carlos was comfortable enough in the position. Like he wasn't necessarily in danger.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it was like I thought he was almost out. You know, I think he tapped almost like basically right before he went to sleep.
I think it was really close, and it's just interesting because he says he was hurt at that point already. You know, I don't know how badly he was shaken up from that strike he was hit with. I mean, Damian Maya only landed 5 strikes in the entire fight, so it was one of those that clearly got through.
Hands. I told you he had some hands.
Yeah, so that's what hurt him, and that to me is just fascinating because we know Carlos Condit is being one of the most durable guys in MMA history. Some of the shots he took from Robbie Lawler in their fight back in January were just, you know, absolutely right on the chin, clean shots, right. And he would fight right through it and come back and, you know, go through the fire. And Damian Maya hits him with one shot on the ground. He said that was basically the beginning of the end.
All right, we're going to talk about that because Carlos Condit obviously made some huge statements at the press conference that were a little bit. But let's talk about Damian Maya first. First of all, how cool was it? I mean, the emotion that he showed in the cage. I mean, it cut away to commercials, so I think a lot of people maybe not didn't see it.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, broke down in tears basically. I mean, it was that special. And it's funny because Damian has said it in the past, and it sounds weird, but he says like a perfect fight to him is a fight where he goes in, he gets the win, but he doesn't get hurt, and he doesn't hurt his opponent. Now, Carlos did say that he was a little rocked by one of the shots on the floor, and he openly admitted that. But to me, seeing that win, I was like, that is Damian Maya's definition of a perfect fight.
Yeah, I can't really think of anything else. The only performance I can really think of that was maybe that level of perfection and just that smooth was the win over Chael Sonnen way back in the day when he, you know, tossed him with the lateral throw and then got on top in a mounted triangle. Beautiful. Like, that was a pretty sensational performance from him too. But this tonight, just, you know, we know Chael Sonnen has had a deficiency when it comes to submission defense. The fact that he tossed him like that was probably the most impressive part of that fight. The fact he finished it on the ground like that, not as surprising, but to do that to Carlos Condit, yes, it's kind of the reverse. His takedown defense maybe isn't the best, but his, you know, ability to fight off his back. I just think of some of those WEC fights he had when he was just throwing up crazy submission attempts. And Condit, I think he has just as many submission wins as he does knockout wins. So he's a guy that, he's not a slouch on the ground. He knows what he's doing. It's been a decade since he was tapped before tonight. And just the way Damian Maya absolutely ran through him was so impressive. It was a huge, huge statement. Just Damian Maya, that win puts him all over the record books. I mean, third most wins in UFC history now. Only Michael Bisping and George St. Pierre have more. Tied for the second most submission wins with Nate Diaz. Only Hoist Gracie has more, and that's only one more than him. Just all these different things. Only been hit with 13 significant strikes total in his past 4 fights. It's just, you look at this guy's resume right now, and it's mind-boggling.
Six fight win streak right now. 3 of those wins by submission. 2 of them performance of the night bonuses. And it's funny because I will never forget speaking to him late last year after the win over Neil Magny. And just saying to him, I'll be honest, I picked against you. You know, I thought, you know, after losing to Jake Shields, losing to Rory McDonald, that, you know, your best days were behind you. And he was just so understanding and honest. He's like, I get it, man. But, like, I had a back injury that I was dealing with. I had, you know, situations and things that I was dealing with. Like, no, I'm back. Trust me, I've got great things ahead of me. And I think he has to have the title shot right now. I really do. I mean, now when I say right now, I don't mean right now.
Yeah.
I still think Stephen Wonderboy Thompson probably – I mean, the timing is there. It was kind of already arranged. Everybody's talking about it. Cole Coffey, what do you think? I mean, Wonderboy is there. He was here this weekend. Sure, that wasn't by accident. That, you know, a key welterweight fight. Here he is. Damian Maia at the post fight press conference said, "Listen, I think I should jump ahead." And it was kind of awesome the way he said it. That's very Damian Maia esque. He was just like, "Dude, I'm old. He's young. Like, let me have my chance now."
Yeah, 38, unbelievable.
That is incredible. Shut up, I'm 38. That's not that old.
No, but for a fighter who's been doing this for a long time and was doing jiu-jitsu forever before that, it's crazy. And he's going through these fights, kind of the anti Carlos Condit. He's taking no damage in any of these bouts. And you look at his entire career, I think he's only been finished one time. Yeah, one time, and that was by that weird knockout from Nate Marquardt at UFC 102 that it's just like he kind of so rushed in and got caught with that weird punch that sent him in
20
like
seconds.
Yeah, in like a midair 360 kind of thing. And, you know, Nate Marquardt was obviously kind of near his prime then. I think that's the win that set him up for a title shot against Anderson Silva. So, yeah, he was very good at that point. But Damian Maia has just had this ability to rebound, and he's had the bad performances and all that stuff. Like, you think back of his UFC 112 title fight with Anderson Silva, like, you probably thought this is the apex of this guy's career,
right?
You know, getting to that spot, which he served in as a replacement for that fight for Vitor Belfort, who was originally supposed to fight Anderson on that card. And it was a terrible fight, and you're just like, okay, this guy's a grappler, but if he can't get it to the ground, he's screwed. But now he manages to get it to the ground every time. His wrestling is unreal. I think he's now in the top six for the most takedowns in UFC history. Like, his game is just – he had the little stage there where he was – trying to get too into the striking, and he was standing with guys when he shouldn't have been, and now he's just like, I cut the shit.
Listen, yeah. I've talked to him. I've talked to his team. He wanted to do what he thought the UFC wanted him to do. You know what I mean? Like, you think that the UFC wants you to be this well-rounded striker brawler, and they do. I mean, for the most part, that is what UFC officials like. I mean, of course, who doesn't? That's what gets the crowd on
their
feet.
That's what the fans like, too, apparently, because if you look at the reactions on, like, social media, people are still calling Damian Maia boring. They're like, that wasn't a fight. It was a grappling match. Yes.
That's ridiculous.
That's not his fault.
If you tweeted anything like that, if you said something like that on social media, just turn the TV off, stop the podcast right now,
get out.
Click off of MMA Junkie. You're in the wrong place, man. Damian Maia is a beast. So, Cole Coffey, I was going to ask you. You were around Wonderboy this week. You were around Damian Maia this week.
Mm-hmm.
You know what's at stake. Tyron Woodley has to put his belt up next. Do you think it should be Wonderboy, or do you think Damian Maia did enough to jump in the line? And as a guy that's been around, and as Mike said, has set all these records, and, you know, on a nice little run. Do you think he should jump in front, or do you still like Wonderboy next?
It's funny, you know, event happens, and, you know, I get so caught up into it, and I immediately want to switch to the guy, and I think that was the same thing that happened when Wonderboy won. I was like, oh, yeah, Wonderboy's got to get it, you know, and now my gut wants me, because, you know, I see an emotional Damian Maia, and it's just like, I want to see him get it, you know, but, you know, they don't bring guys out like, you know, Thompson, unless they already got something that works, you know. I mean, for a while they used to toy with the idea of bringing guys up there into the octagon and actually doing the whole call out. I'm glad they kind of stopped doing that, because that was so WWE ish.
It was
just
Bellator. Bellator does that a ton now.
I don't know. More than likely, I can see him probably still giving that to Thompson, but I just after hearing Damon and how long he's been in what he's done. He's just such a nice dude. But fuck, I can't say anything wrong against Steven either, you know, as nice as can be. I would like to see Damian get that shot. But ultimately, he's going to get there regardless. So even if they give it to Steven and Steven gets that belt, Damian's going to be right there. I think Damian, if he keeps doing what he's doing, and especially now with he's getting this, I'm telling you, there's something going on with his hands, man. They're coming strong. I could see him having the belt in.
That'd be amazing.
But next year, I think he's gonna have the belt next year.
That'd be amazing. I. It's funny because Wonderboy is younger, but he is 33. I mean, he's not a kid.
Spring chicken.
He's not a Wonderboy. Yeah. He's more of a
Wonder Man.
Wonder Man. A Wonder dude of, you know, he's not young, but you know, he did kind of have it set up earlier. He was kind of promised, but I know what you're saying, Cole Coffee. Like, you know, those, you come off the event and you're like, dude, I want to see that right now. But I do, you know what? I fully support Maya for saying, I'm going to stand around. I'm just going to hang out. I'm going to wait. Hopefully they get this done quick, but I'm not going to fight again. I think that's the right call, right? I mean, you basically have your shot. There's nothing else you can do. You've put together this impressive win streak. There's not any other fights that make a ton of sense. I mean, the only bad.
He's already look at Magny, Matt Brown. I mean, like,
yeah, those are good.
He's taking the dudes out at the top.
Just,
I mean,
what if George St. Pierre comes back?
Yeah, and that seems. I asked Stephen Thompson about that tonight. I said, do you feel like, I know Tyron Woodley called out pretty much GSP and Nick Diaz. Nick Diaz doesn't make sense for it, but like, can you respect, if George St. Pierre came back and got the next shot, can you respect it? The fact that he was the longtime champion, he walked out of the sport with the title, all that stuff. Like, I feel like you can not complain about that. He's the greatest welterweight of all time. Of course. For him to come back. But he even said, you know, it's been 3 years since he fought. He should come back and have, you know, a super fight with someone like Anderson Silva, something like that. And I don't blame him for that. Of course, he's just looking out for number one. He's trying to get a shot. But, yeah, if GSP comes back, I don't know. It's an interesting situation. You could do maybe Wonderboy versus Maya if you really want to. That would be unfortunate because it would kill off a contender. But there's things you can do there. But, yeah, I think even still, you look at those two resumes, and Stephen Thompson's is unbelievable,
all right,
too.
So GSP, let's say GSP comes back. He's in. He's definitely in. You got GSP, you got Wonderboy, and you got Maya. Who gets the next shot?
If GSP wants to fight for the title, yeah, it has to be him.
Ah,
I mean,
no,
he's the biggest draw. He's the longtime champion, never lost the title, still on, I think, a 12-fight winning streak in the UFC, something like that. He's the guy. You have to give him a shot. The fact he's been out for so long, it's unfortunate for both those guys, but if they can't understand
that. And then
you
make them fight each other?
Yes. I mean, I don't think that would be ideal because
you can't make three people line up for a title
shot. No, you can't.
That's too long. And you can make two people line up for a title shot, not three.
Yeah, no, I think you probably just booked that fight because it's weird, too, because what do you really know about GSP? Is he going to come back for one fight, like, and then is he going to be defending the title?
I saw some people throwing out, like, if GSP comes back, give Wonderboy the title shot and then give GSP versus Maya, which GSP versus Maya stylistically sounds awesome.
That.
But we're sitting here like hardcores, dude. I don't think GSP versus Maya sells one pay-per-view.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think the return of GSP versus a wet paper bag is going to sell a lot of pay-per-views.
GSP versus paper bag sells the same as GSP versus Maya, right?
Yep.
I mean, I don't mean
yep.
that in a rude way. And you're saying people are hating on Maya's style. GSP style versus Maya style, that's not going to be a fan or a casual fan type of fight.
Yeah.
But I'd love to see it.
No, it'd be interesting because George's game is obviously on the ground, but does he want to go there? I mean, he's obviously a sensational striker as well. We've seen his karate game and all that stuff, but I love that fight. It's an interesting style matchup. But, yeah, it's not the sexiest of matchups out there. So I think if GSP comes back, you give him the fight, and maybe you just book those two against each other. And you don't know GSP's long-term future, but would that stop them? No, they're giving Dan Henderson a title shot who says he's going to retire if he wins the belt. Like, clearly that's not a huge issue to them. Even if GSP came back for one fight, won the belt back, and was like, hey, I just needed to prove to myself that I can still be a top guy. I beat now, like, four different generations of top welterweights, and that's it. I'm done. I'm out. You could vacate the title and have, you know, whoever else. You could have Maya versus Wonderboy for the vacant belt. Or, like, there's a lot of different things you could do there, but
it's crazy to think that Maya has gone through the people he's gone through, as you said, Cole Coffee. Magny's in there, Gunnar Nelson's in there, Matt Brown, now Carlos Condit. And then to say, now you got to fight Stephen Thompson too?
Yeah.
Like, dude,
it's unfortunate, but you can say the same thing about, like, a Max Holloway, who's won 9 in a row, and he's beat some really good guys, and now, like, people are saying, oh, like, you know, you should fight Frankie Edgar or, you know, Aldo if McGregor's going to hang out for a while doing other stuff at, like, 155 or whatever, or just, like, no, it came up Anthony Pettis now tonight too. Maybe that could be a matchup for Holloway. Like, it sucks. Some of these guys just get put in positions, and it's all about timing, all that stuff. Look at Tony Ferguson too. Like, there's just guys where the timing works out. There's other contenders there that they just have to do, like, so much more for whatever reason. And it seems like Damian Maia might be one of those guys, but it all completely, you know, who knows?
It's all, I guess it's all going to boil down to whether or not GSP comes back. Because if GSP doesn't come back, I think, you know, maybe they do Woodley, Wonderboy, you know, in the next couple of months. You know, maybe October, November. And then Maya just sits around, waits till maybe like the Super Bowl card, something like that. excuse me, and he gets his title shot as well.
Yeah.
But fortunately, I don't believe GSP's heart, and I don't believe that he's got the desire.
I won't believe it till I see it when he's back. But no, I mean, and we don't know what his plans are. Does he even want to fight for the title, or does he want like a, you know, Anderson Silva type of fight, some one of those other matchups that they could do that's not for the belt? I don't know what GSP's thoughts are. All he said is that he wants to come back at this point, and we know that they're still far apart on contract negotiations there, and. Yeah, we don't know what fight he wants. I know he said he's interested in fighting Tyron Woodley, but, you know, these people say a lot of things.
I think right now everybody's trying to figure out what GSP wants. Fortunately, Mike Bond was able to get a hold of BJ Penn tonight and find out what BJ Penn thought about George St. Pierre and whether or not he actually wants to come back and what fight should be there for him when he comes back. So I'm just gonna set that up. I'm just gonna share that now. Mike Bond with the exclusive from BJ Penn.
George, I want you to fight for the belt, George. You can be the champion once more. If you do it for Hilo. We can cover the fight on BJPenn.com. It will be great. We'll post the highlights, the fight recap. Let's do it. Let's go. Hawaii, BJ.
That's how we do it, MMA Junkie, man. You don't even know. We just reach out everywhere. So, listen, I just don't think we can sing Damian Maya's praises enough, man. Just a fantastic, fantastic performance. Here's what he had to say to us all at the post-fight press conference.
Ryan Stan asked you, and you have wanted that title shot for a little while. Do you have a timeline in mind? Will you talk with your team about if it's going to be a certain amount of time I need to stay active? Or for you, do you want to just wait until that opportunity comes no matter what?
I wait. You know, I can stay active in training and doing my teaching, do whatever I do every day. I think, you know, the guy that I fought today is a guy, he's not just a former champion, but he is also a guy that many people, including me, which, like I said, I was watching ringside or octagon side, his fights against Lawler. And many people, including me, thought he won and he was supposed to be the champ. So, you know, what else should I do? I'm six fights in a row and six wins in a row, and that's it, you know?
Right here, follow-up for you, Damian. Do you feel like, I know Brian Stan said what he said in the cage, but do you feel like this performance tonight could have possibly made the UFC brass reconsider putting Stephen Thompson, maybe giving you the shot first instead?
I think so. You know, I respect very much Thompson, you know, he's a great guy, and of course, you know, I'm much older than him, so if they can give for me first, would be great. If not, I hope they give for him really fast, and they decide that, you know, and I wait for, you know, see who win the fight.
Yeah, and you, you tied the record for third most wins in UFC history tonight, second most submissions all time. Does that stuff mean anything to you, or is this career not going to be complete unless you get that title fight and win the belt?
No, I'm very grateful to everything that I, you know, accomplished in my life. I'm very grateful for my family. I'm very grateful for, you know, to be a jiu-jitsu role model and to represent the martial art that I love and to be able to travel, which is something that I love, to teach jiu-jitsu, giving seminars, everything. So, you know, my life is complete already, you know, and the title shot and the title will be something else, you know, something amazing if it happens. But, you know, I'm already, I must be grateful for everything that I have in my life. You know, I come from nothing, and today, you know, I have a nice house, you know, I have everything that I need to live. You know, my kids, they able to study in good schools in Brazil, and, you know, I'm able to provide them everything there, you know, many things that I didn't have, so I'm grateful.
And of course, you got emotional after the win. It was a big one for you. You took a moment, kind of sat down on your knees in the cage and soaked it all in. Can you tell us what was going through your head at that moment?
There was mixed feelings. You know, it's like to achieve the 60 win in a row and to be the Brazilian with most wins and to win in that way against a guy, like I said, that I respect very much. And I was like, you know, before the fight, I was wondering, this guy, he has a real, you know, big knockout power. And I, you know, this fight I can win, I can lose. And also I can go to the hospital after that, you know. I can get like a knee to my face or a kick to my head. And this sport is really tough. It's the toughest sport because it's not just about lose, but, you know, you can really get hurt. And you know, to pull that win against him and you know, to everything came to my mind, my family, you know, the chance for the title shot and everything, like I said, that I'm grateful for, you know, that I achieved in my life. Everything came together and then I got a little bit emotional.
So Damian Maia picked up a huge win. Definitely deserves a title shot next. We'll see. George St. Pierre could though come in there and throw a little bit of wrench in the plans. But, you know, I think the way it works out, I think you're going to get Woodley versus Wonderboy next. And I think Damian Maia has made it clear that he's going to sit around and wait on the sidelines and take the winner of that fight. And I think that's a smart plan. Now, let's talk about the flip side of that equation. And that would be, of course, Carlos Condit. Got to be incredibly disappointed. I know he was frustrated. I mean, to admit that he got hurt by a shot on the ground, I don't mean that as a swipe at Damian Maia, but the punches did not look big on the ground. Admitted that he got hurt and, you know, basically closed out the press conference on a very sobering note. You know, just essentially, as if I'm reading between the lines correctly, essentially suggesting that he's worried about brain damage and the types of shot that he's taken in his career. Cole Coffey is funny because myself and the young Mike Baum were up there in the front row of the press conference, you know, kind of asking questions and stuff like that. But in doing some of the video work that I've done over the past year or so, kind of learning that side of the game, I've seen that when you're back there in the back and you're kind of looking at it but behind the lens, you know, you kind of have a different view on things. But, did you get that? That emotion, like it's, I mean, Carlos Condit is not an old dude, but I get the feeling that he's basically ready to be done.
It certainly seemed like it. I mean, it's funny, we had talked earlier, or maybe I was talking with Casey or in the back or whatever. You know, from when I started with the UFC to even now, this transformation from where Carlos wasn't a very vocal and open person during the fight weeks, he was very reserved, just very about business. And then, you know, you see him now and he's so much fun during the fight week and just so much stuff. You know, he's so much more. I don't know if it's just seemed at peace and at ease and was just in the flow of things.
Him
so,
and Ricky Lundell did the pro wrestling display, I mean, like, at the open workouts.
That was
Carlos went and sat on the floor with all the kids and was like taking pictures. And
I don't know if that just meant that he, at some point, maybe, you know, now when I think about it, when it seems now more like he's considering the end, where it seemed like he was really just getting really the swing of things or whatever. So maybe there was that switch already where he realized that I got to stop maybe taking it so serious, or maybe even just take the time that's happening and use it the best, you know, and try to leave a mark or whatever. Maybe that's why all of a sudden, you know, he was more jumping out there for the fans. Not that he wasn't doing anything for the fans or whatever before, but he was just, I don't know, he was just much more engaging now, it seemed, on the, you know, watching from the outside. And I don't know, maybe it all boiled down to where he was already starting to think about the end and wanted to embrace these moments a lot more. Yeah. But no, I mean, I'm a huge fan of Carlos. I mean, even from, you know, with the UFC, we did trips on to different Army bases or Air Force bases, and he's signing, you know, things for the troops, and I think he's done some things outside for them as well. I mean, he's one of the good guys when it comes to guys that represent the sport, how to carry yourself, how to be a good person, a good fighter, his work ethic. And anytime I think we start thinking about one of those guys stepping away from the sport, it sucks because, you know, I mean, I think a lot of guys that are involved in the sport are great people, and I think a lot of times when people get to know them, they're like, wow, I had all these preconceived notions about what fighters are like, and then they meet him like, wow, it's the nicest guy I ever met, you know, and that's usually true. But still, when you see somebody that's been a really good representation of what you would like to be what you would want to have as a spokesperson for the sport. And when they start talking about leaving the sport, you start worrying about, you know, how do you fill that void? One, how do you fill the void of watching a Carlos Condit fight, because you love watching him fight just for how he fights, but also what he brings to the sport? You know, I mean, people from all walks of life, you know, kind of get Carlos. He's that dude that everybody gets,
yeah.
You know, and so when somebody that leaves, it leaves a vacuum in the sport that, you know, I don't want everybody to be like a Conor McGregor or this other just, you know, crazy whatever. I just like the guy that's just the hard worker and just goes out doing it. That's why I think I like Matt Brown a lot.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times he just goes out there and he grinds.
Yeah.
He might not be the most outspoken.
Like, Conor's kind of doesn't seem like the most gifted athlete of all times or the most, like.
But he gives everything. And when he does pull stuff off, it's absolutely amazing, you know. And I hope that it's maybe not the end, but, you know, I can totally respect because, you know, even seeing the countdown stuff and watching footage for this dude from years, from having to do edits, you see him closely tied with his family. And I can only imagine, you know, I'm not a father myself, but I know what it – I can only imagine what it does for the effort that they have to put in to be a fighter, but let alone to take time away from your family and all this other stuff, that I could see where somebody starts really looking at their point and like, you know, are there other ways can I contribute and do things within my family, within whatever, you know, is this fighting, is all this other stuff that I'm doing really worth it to keep going that route when, you know, if he is worried about brain damage or if he is just worried about the fact of, you know, do you have it, you know, to want to keep going like that? You know, maybe he wants to become a great, I mean, guys, I think that can take themselves to what these fighters do and they put themselves, they have the self-discipline and do whatever, I think can excel and do anything that they actually put their mind to.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, maybe there's some other things that he's just now thinking that maybe that's a better,
I hope that's energy spent. I hope that's it, because I have to say it was heartbreaking for me personally to hear him say, I don't know if I belong here anymore. And it's like, wait a minute. Now, if you're telling me you don't like this sport anymore, if you're telling me, like you said, I don't like spending time away from my family. I don't like spending – I get it, man. You know, as a father, having a kid, I get it. You know, spending time away from your family is not easy. It's not fun. I mean, that's what we do. I mean, that's what we literally do every week. You've got a girlfriend. I've got a wife and a kid. We spend time away from them every week.
I have no one.
It's not – yeah, you're – no, I was not having any.
I got you.
I was gonna.
I stumped John.
Yes. But you know,
I thought you were gonna crack a mom joke.
I was gonna crack a mom joke, but I stopped myself short. I stopped myself short of a mom joke. But you know, we make these sacrifices and we do these things and it's tough. So if that's it, I totally get it. But like when he was sitting up there tonight, what I couldn't get was whether he's saying, I don't have a passion for it anymore, like, I really don't feel like I belong. Because if he really doesn't feel like he belongs at the highest level anymore, which I get it, you just lost in less than 2 minutes, like, that's got to be frustrating. You had zero offense. I think he landed one punch, according to Fight Metric.
One strike.
I mean, I can imagine the frustration, but, like, can Carlos Condit legitimately think he doesn't belong at the top level of the sport? Because to me, he's top 10, top 15 at worst. At worst, he's top 15. What do you consider the highest level?
I mean, what it reminded me of a lot, actually, tonight when he was saying that was after Rampage lost to Glover Teixeira a couple years ago at that Fox show. And he basically said, you know, I realized tonight that I can't hang with this level anymore. And what exactly does that mean? He is still probably a top 15 light heavyweight, and I know light heavyweight is a little bit different, thinner of a weight class than welterweight is, but still, in his mind, there's a lot of these guys, they'll say, if I can't be the champion or I'm not contending for a title, I don't want to do this anymore. Like, I don't want to just be a guy in the sport, and I feel like Carlos Condit is one of those dudes. He's very competitive. I asked him about a fight against Matt Brown or something, which when they booked that for, I think it was a Fox card as well, a couple years ago, people were so excited for that, and it would still be an amazing fight, but like, that doesn't seem to interest him that much anymore. He doesn't want to do this just to do it. I don't know what his financial situation is, any of that stuff. That's a reason why we stick around, but I think I saw a quote before the fight. He said, I want to get out of the game before, you know, like it passes me by or before, you know, I don't have the choice or all that kind of stuff. Right. And he kind of dropped a hint tonight as well, being like, I wouldn't want to go out on a loss like this. But as soon as you start having those thoughts and you're chasing the perfect ending, that's when stuff starts to go really bad. We've seen like the Chuck Liddells of the world, those kind of things. Just one more fight. Like, I want that good performance. I'm still capable. I'm sure Carlos Condit's very capable of still beating a lot of those top 10 guys in the division.
Oh,
but
yeah,
to him, maybe it's just not worth it. And he's probably seeing signs. I don't know how his training camps go, any of that stuff. But for him, maybe he just doesn't think, if he's getting hurt by strikes on the ground from Damian Maia, it's just, he seems like a very self-aware, self-conscious guy. And to him, he's been doing this for a very, very long time. And he's been through some tough, tough fights, even going back to his WEC days way before that, like Rumble on the Rock type stuff. He's been around the sport for a very long time. And maybe he just feels that if he can't be, you know, the top three, it's not worth it to him anymore. It's, which is crazy to think about, because he was one scorecard on one round away from being the champion in January.
It's crazy. Yeah, man, he's been so close so many times along the way. And, I mean, he's a guy that, you know, is he a Hall of Famer? I don't know. I mean, maybe he didn't. I mean, he did hold a belt. It was an interim belt. He basically said, I know it's not the real belt. And I can respect the hell out of him for saying that. Like, it's not the real belt. It's the interim belt. But he you know, he does hold the title of former UFC champion. The guy is certainly one of those fan favorite type legends.
If you ask me right now if he was a Hall of Famer, I'd say no.
I would say no also, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
But,
well, unless you consider the Hall of Fame, like, he could have his fights inducted into the fight wing, which technically makes him Hall of Fame. But no, like, individual, he's not there, in my opinion.
But it's one of those guys, it's like, you're right. Maybe the accomplishments alone don't mean Hall of Fame, but, like, he's a star. I mean, he's a fan favorite. Mm-hmm. He moves the needle in terms of web clicks, in terms of people getting excited about his fights. Yeah, I mean, all those things are big, so I don't know, man. I just think it would be a damn shame if Carlos Condit hung it up. The guy's a legend. And I don't know, maybe too. Like, I mean, I'm getting to that point now where I've been covering the sport professionally for like a decade. And, you know, a lot of people have hung it up.
Are you about to announce your retirement?
Yeah. I'm also done.
It's the final episode.
I guess what I'm saying is, like, it's funny because, you know, 10 years into covering this as a professional, like, you know, there were guys that have retired along the way that were kind of already well into their career when I got into it. Like, but now, I mean, now I'm starting to see people walk away from the sport that were, like, just getting started when I was just getting started. It's, like, hard to see, you know what I mean?
No, that's something that I've even said from day one. I've been doing this a lot less time than you have, but I've known that I'm going to be covering the sport a hell of a lot longer than 90% of the people are going to be participating in the sport.
Yeah.
It's crazy to think about. And yeah, just Condit, it'd be unfortunate to see it end like this for him, but I would rather that happen. I'd rather him be self-aware and self-conscious enough to know that he's not – he just may be a combination of all these things. He's not ready to continue doing this and putting his body through all that stuff. I'm always on the side of, like, you know, fighter safety, you know, the best interest of the fighters. And if he's saying these things, it's, like, massive warning signs. You don't want one foot out the door. Even if he already did this song and dance, not as bluntly – after he lost to Robbie Lawler, he said, you know, maybe this is the end, but obviously he came back. But now it was a lot more hard-hitting, the stuff he was saying. When you sit there, you know, those comments he was making were very real to hear from the guy. And if he's saying that, I don't want to see someone who compete in the sport who's doing that, because this, you can get really, really hurt. And he's fortunate that, you know, someone like, all he did was get, you know, rocked by a shot and choked out tonight. He didn't get, you know, seriously, seriously hurt, which could happen if they put him against someone else.
Let's hear the words from the man himself.
You had talked in the past about maybe, you know, the end could be near. I just wonder what the process will be for you. How will you make that decision? How will you take that time? When will you decide what comes next for you, if you will fight again?
You know, I'll probably talk to the people around me, talk to my wife, and, you know, kind of make the decision after we've, you know, had some discussion and, you know, done a little bit of assessing of where I'm going, what's on the horizon.
Can you explain what it's like to be on the ground with a grappler like him? Is it something that you felt prepared for, and in the fight, maybe it just didn't, it felt a little different? Can you just explain what it's like?
Well, yeah, I mean, he's obviously a super, super high level jiu-jitsu practitioner. You know, actually, he hit me with a shot from half guard, I think, that rattled me, and I guess I didn't really expect that. And after that, he started moving to mount. I gave up my back because I didn't want to get hit. I was kind of rocked from that shot. And he puts together his passing with his striking very well, and you know that's why he is as good as he is.
Yeah, and of course you came back for a main event, big fight. It seems like if you'd won, you'd be right back in the mix for a title shot. Mm-hmm. If you do continue fighting, is it gonna need to be big fights like this in order to keep you motivated, keep you going, or are you just, you know, people mentioned maybe that fight with Matt Brown people were talking about for a long time. Is that this, like, does that stuff interest you, or does it need to be something like this?
I don't know, man. I don't know if I have any business fighting at this level anymore. I've been at this for a really long time. The pressure of kind of being one of the top guys for, almost a decade, it's been awesome. I've loved being involved in the sport at the time that I have, and got to do what I love for a living for a long period of time. But I don't know, man. I don't know if I belong here anymore. We'll see.
That was some heavy stuff. I mean, you're saying back there. Did you have this feeling kind of coming in, like, man, this is going? I'm going to see right now if I still want to be doing this, or what was your thought process? Was that in your back of your mind that the game might have passed you by at that point?
Honestly, it's definitely been in the back of my mind for a while now. It's been a long career, and I think there comes a point in every fighter's career that they have to kind of question how long they're going to continue to do that. And I've been doing that for a little while. Wasn't my night tonight. I don't know if that's going to be the swan song for me. Hopefully not. I would hate to go out on a loss like this. I would have at least liked to have got in there and, put on an exciting show like I usually do. I don't know what's in the card. I'm leaning towards possibly being done.
I know that the last time you were submitted, I think it was like 10 years ago against Pat Healy. It's been a long time, so it's very difficult to do. But what do your you have great coaching staff. What do they say to you, after a loss like this? And, like, what's the communication like at that point?
I apologize to them because I feel really bad because they put their time and effort and they're here away from their families as well. So it's not just me who's disappointed. It's them also. And, I hate to waste their time. Everybody's time is valuable. And, they're like family to me. And, that's what the sport is. I mean, it's you win and you lose. And, ultimately it's about going in there and testing your skills. And it doesn't always turn out in your favor. Tonight it didn't for me, and I think they're aware of that. It's just kind of that's how it goes.
And Carlos, I know it's tough to talk about, but when you say you don't belong, I think most of us feel that you still have the ability to compete at the highest level. So are you talking about talent, or is it about passion that you just don't have the love for doing it anymore?
Some aspects I definitely am passionate about. I love, I love the preparation. I love, I train really hard for this camp, really hard. I've had a tough career with a lot of fights, and I've taken a lot of punishment. And, I don't know if I can continue to be, take shots, honestly.
All right, well, listen, man, we got to cheer things up. It was a somber move. Carlos Condit, hopefully he's not walking away from the sport. I think he's, I don't know, man. I think he's still got competitive fights left in him. If he's ready to walk away, then God bless him, man. I appreciate all he's done for the sport. But I do hope he comes back because I would love to see the Natural Born Killer fight again. Anthony Pettis, Charles Oliveira, let's talk about the co-main event. Anthony Pettis, huge. I mean, this was a must-win for him, and I got to be honest. This whole move down to 145, I wasn't sure about it. I spoke to Malki Kawa for a little bit this evening, his manager, and Malki Kawa was like, I told him he had to. I told him he needed to. I told him he should. And, God bless him, I guess, for having that foresight. I wasn't sure this was a good move or not. Cold Coffee, it's different. You used to work behind the scenes and used to spend a little bit more time up close to these fighters. I tell you one thing that's weird. These new early weigh-ins that we're doing, I think one of the weird things is we're getting to sit in this room with like seven people now because nobody goes to it.
Yeah.
And we're seeing these fighters up close when they're having to make these weight cuts and that sort of thing. And, you know, we're not just seeing it from a stage and on TV and further back. And, man, I wasn't sure if Anthony Pettis was going to be good or not at 145. But I don't know, man. I thought he looked really good tonight. And Charles Oliveira, even though I think most people were picking Anthony Pettis coming to this fight, Charles Oliveira was a live underdog, and it was a great fight. So
I picked him.
You picked Oliveira? Yep. I didn't even know that. I respect you for that pick, man, and it looked good.
It looked good for a minute because Anthony was starting. It looked like he was starting to fade, and then Oliveira was getting those takedowns almost at will as the fight went on, and then Anthony just caught him in a choke, which was shocking to me. Oliveira, I believe, has only been submitted once in his career, and that was by Jim Miller with that knee bar, like, very early when he was like 20 in the UFC, something like that. So
for sure. Well, so Cool Coffee, I'm going to ask you, what did you think about the way Anthony Pettis performed tonight? And then also, were you worried about him earlier in this week? Because, man, he was
I wasn't worried about him, but I knew he was dealing with some stuff because just the way that, like I said, we commented about how much he was just chomping away at the gum. Actually, both of them were, and kudos to Charles for coming in way underweight. Good for him. I mean, that was amazing.
We kind of joked after all the times he missed weight, he's kind of like making up for it.
Yeah, I guess he said as much, but what is cutting those extra 3 pounds? Like, you make a statement by just making weight. You don't need to go 3 pounds under.
It's your career weight allowance. Like, you were 3 over.
Now he can be 2 over for the next time.
He's even now.
But no, I thought that fight, if they didn't give the fight of the night to who they did, I thought that was in the running for it.
I thought they should have got it.
Yeah, I kind of thought Anthony maybe got robbed a little bit. If anything, I thought he did good enough to maybe get a performance. I mean, what he did to Charles, I mean, immediately after that first round, Charles' eye was just swelling or whatever.
Dude, the liver shots.
The liver, yeah.
I think he got hurt really bad by that first kick of the fight.
That was vicious, and I thought Anthony looked incredible. I mean, I thought that's what we know he was capable of doing, just maybe hadn't seen it or whatever. But, no, I thought it was great. But, yeah, I thought it was an incredible fight, again, until it gave the final night away. I mean, I thought he was a shoe-in for some sort of a bonus tonight. And I was a little sad he didn't get it. But, it was great.
Good.
It was a good fight.
You know what else I will say? I kind of respect it. It's interesting because – I mean, obviously, 145 is Conor McGregor's weight class. That name never came out of Anthony Pettis' mouth this whole week, and I think we gave him plenty of times to ask it, plenty of times to talk about
except
it.
Except when I asked him about the fight strategy, but...
Yeah, oh, of course. But I mean, as far as, like, just saying, like, what I want to do next, I want to do next, like, he could say, I'm at 145, Conor McGregor, get your bitch ass down here and fight Showtime, fight the real, I mean, you know what I mean? Like,
and it could happen. Do you see John Kavanaugh tweeting about that fight tonight?
I didn't.
Yeah,
know.
He was just like, could be an interesting matchup type stuff. That'd be fun. I think Pettis could be a problem for McGregor.
It could be fun. I mean, it could be a way for me, but I will respect. I know this sounds weird because all the fighters right now are trying to make as much money as they can, as they obviously should. The window is small. I mean, Carlos Condit is such a young guy. He's talking about walking away. But I like the fact that Anthony Pettis is yes, Conor McGregor, of course, would be a money fight. It's a money fight for anybody. But he's saying, I want to be a champion. I want to make history. I want to be a two-division champ. Like, I don't know, man. I mean, saying I want to be a champion means you've got to fight the champion, who is Conor McGregor.
Mm-hmm.
But he hasn't said that name once. He hasn't thrown it out there. And I don't know. Am I weird? Because there's something about it that likes the fact that he's not trying – because sometimes, I mean, I just feel like sometimes when people say Conor McGregor's name or whatever, they're just calling out some bullshit fight, like, just to start interest. And I'm like, I don't know, man. I kind of feel like he's old school. He's like, dude, I lost 3 fights in a row.
Yeah.
I got to rebirth myself. I got to re-get in there, but I want the title. I don't know. I kind
of
liked it.
Yeah, I can respect his approach on it. And, of course, it might have done more for him by saying McGregor's name because that stuff all clicks and it does well anytime someone mentions his name, especially someone that's very relevant in the sport like Pettis. But, yeah, I completely appreciate his approach, the fact that he's saying what his ultimate goals are but not calling out anyone specific. I'd still love to see that Jose Aldo fight if Conor doesn't come back down like they were supposed to fight before.
Yeah,
you know, Max Holloway and Anthony Pettis would be an absolutely insane fight.
Oh,
there's some good matchups for him there, and I think But him dropping down, winning this fight, he's an instant factor in that division. Like, I think one more win against the right guy, he could be right in that title shot position. Maybe now, once he has a little bit more time to digest the win, all that stuff, maybe he does an interview between now and his next fight and he says some stuff about McGregor. But tonight, I think he was just trying to embrace the fact that he finally won a fight again, because it's been a while for him, and just try to go from there.
I'm still a Charles Oliveira fan too, dude. I've loved that kid since he first came into the UFC, and
he had a lot of chances to quit in that fight,
and of course
he tapped out to a submission at the end, which was, I know Pettis, he's an underrated submission guy. He's had some nice slick submission wins. You know, he tapped out Benson Henderson with an armbar.
Yep.
Very good fighter on the ground, but Oliveira's, you know, I think one of the, you know, most submissions in UFC history, and he's
for him to go out and do that.
But he could have called it quits way earlier in that fight if he wanted to. He had many chances to get out, and he didn't take any of them until the absolute, you know, last moment where it seems like he wasn't getting out of that guillotine, so he had a tap.
I agree, man. I love it. All right, Paige VanZant, Beck Rawlings. Paige VanZant, we talked about it. We sat at the same table a couple nights earlier from tonight, and we said, like, Beck is a stronger, more powerful fighter. She showed it. She showed it early on, man. I think she won the first round on all three judges' cards.
Beck?
Yeah. And okay. I think that she was doing good. I mean, Paige was moving very, very well. She was, you know, darting in and out of range. But Beck was the one that was putting the little counters together. She was you know, landing pretty well. But ultimately, Paige came in with this damn crazy.
Yair Rodriguez. Channeling him. Pantera.
That's the best one. You know, Cole Coffey, I know you're a fan of the women's division.
Am I?
I know you are. Don't lie. What did you think about this? Because I thought, you know, Paige came out with this, like, flying knee to start or whatever. I'm like, okay, cool. We've seen that. I mean, people do that. They run across the cage. But then she kept throwing these aerial techniques, and I'm like, what are you doing? Like, stop. That's not going to work. Obviously, I don't know shit about MMA. And then she hits this leaping switch kick to win the fight. I know that you've always been a fan of Beck and interviewing her, because she's fun. She's got this, you know, kind of attitude or whatever. But a big win for Paige VanZant.
Yeah, certainly was. I think if anything, she was trying to psych herself up or just really sort of shake the cobwebs, even though she didn't, quote, leave the sport or go whatever. She just happened to step away for, I don't know, whatever many amount
eight
a months,
month.
8 months,
not,
which
not
was
eight.
Not
the
longest
career, right, Mike?
Not the longest of her career. But I think she was gonna. And I think also too, I think she recognized the fact that while Beck is super strong and has some hands, I think she recognized that she could probably get away throwing the legs out there. Like, Beck's not gonna all of a sudden become this jiu-jitsu master and grab her leg and then she's done for. So I think she probably felt that she could stretch it out. But honestly, too, I think she wanted to go out there and just push herself. I think she was probably caught up and excited about the moment to get back out there and was willing to try some things. But you even look at her face after she landed it. She was so surprised herself, you know. And actually, as she's kind of thrown it, she had like this little smirk, like she was ready to sort of smile with Beck. Like, haha, yeah, see what I'm trying? But it actually connected. And then she was like, oh, shit, you know. And then actually went forward and then tried to, you know, finish it or whatever. And I thought that was great. So, I mean, kudos to Paige. I mean, like, we've always said Paige has got a lot of talent. You know, if they just rushed her up a little bit and stuck her in front of some people that were more well-rounded before her overall well-roundedness, you know, got to a certain level. But, you know, Paige has a lot of talent. She has a lot of strength. And, I mean, that just added another facet that now people need to focus on, the fact that she's willing to pull some extra little tricks out of the bag. I mean,
she's not a title contender right now. Like, she's not.
No,
she's
not. No.
But
no.
She's fun. I think, of course, she's marketable, and of course, she's fun to watch. She's entertaining. She deserves to be on the Sacramento card. That's a no-brainer.
Of course.
You know, but I think she doesn't necessarily need to be against, you know, a top five. I mean, it's
no, and she shouldn't have been in the first place, but UFC needed a main event. I like that Joanne Calderwood fight that was originally supposed to be the main event of that card when she ended up fighting Rose, but she got hurt. Rose was the one that was available. It wasn't their first choice, obviously, but they had to do a fight there, and it was too much for Paige at the time. Rose is really good. They're around the same age, but Rose is just kind of a little more advanced beyond her years. So I don't know. It was, I think right now you just slow her roll a bit and just give her, maybe you go back to that Calderwood fight if she wins in a couple weeks.
I'd like to see that.
Yeah, but at the same time, Calderwood's fighting Jessica Andrade, I believe, who has looked like a monster. I don't know if I'd want to see her against Paige at this point. Like, I think that might be a little too much, but yeah, we'll see. There's some fights you can do for her, but there's no need to.
Okay. Yeah. That's not bad.
Yeah, there's lots of fights you can do, but there's no need to be putting her against the top three. Maybe you do, you know, Jessica Penne, who was in Beck's corner tonight, like someone like that.
Yeah.
That's maybe fought for the title, someone there, but was not super competitive with Joanna in either of those fights. There's fights you can do, but right now I don't want to see Paige like in a number one contender fight, and I don't think her team or her would even think that was a good idea.
They don't. But hell of a win for her, for sure. I mean, that was great, and does nothing to hurt her marketability, that's for sure. Jim Miller, Joe Lozano ended up being the fight of the night in the first main card fight of the night. Just briefly want to say this. I had the fight scored for Joe Lozano, but it's weird. It's one of those fights where I thought Jim Miller was fighting so good. Like, Jim Miller came to the cage with, like, some attitude, like, some swagger, like, some – I mean, I was like, dude, he's got a little something tonight. Like, that maybe, man – and, dude, his boxing, the combinations that he was throwing so hard. I mean, he wobbled Joe Lozano on a couple different times. Now, Joe does a pretty good job of fighting through that and a pretty good job of covering up. So it's weird. It's one of these fights where, like, I scored the fight for Joe Lozano, and I think it was definitely, you know, worthy of a fight of the night bonus. But I can't say it's a robbery because I thought Jim Miller was fighting phenomenal, man. I thought he looked good.
There was worse decisions on the card than tonight. But, yeah, you go to MMADecisions.com, who obviously track the media scorecards and all that stuff. I think 25 of 20.
How's that meant, dog?
Can you hear that?
Yeah.
Oh, I can totally.
You can hear the cheering.
I wonder if you just hear it through my giant head. It just resonates all the way up to where the speaker falls.
That is true. Yeah, that's true. It's actually resonating through your brain.
It's resonating through my brain. I apologize. But it was delicious.
Good night.
I need to get another one.
You should.
Do it. But, yeah, as I was saying, I think 25 of 27 who scored the fight had it for Lozano. So I thought it was one of those fights, you know, a fairly clear 2-1. But, yeah, it's an unfortunate break because if it went Lozano's way, then you could revisit the trilogy at some point.
No.
You know, there's things you could do that.
I wanted Lozano to win just so we could see this fight a third time because these dudes, I mean – They're just great vets, man. It was fun to watch.
Yeah, they're one of those things. Both time they fought, first time was a fight of the year candidate. It might have been fight of the year in 2012.
Yeah.
I can't remember exactly. But this one, it wasn't that standard because I think the first one, just all the blood made it so much more, enhanced it a lot.
Yeah.
But this one, it was still a really good fight. It'll
Plus
be, you know, I imagine.
The year now,
exactly.
It's a little tougher to be fighting.
But, like,
the year.
I imagine it'll probably be on, like, the top five for our fight of the month thing
for MMA
Junkie. Like, it's not going to beat out. McGregor, Diaz, or anything like that. But it was still probably one of the top five best fights this month. Probably up there with, you know, Pettis and Oliveira. But yeah, kind of unfortunate it didn't go Lozano's way, but he got another fight night bonus. He said to you during your interview earlier this week that he was going to get it back from the record from Nate Diaz. So they're both tied for the most in UFC history with 15. So there's some positives to take away. And you look at his Twitter, you know, he handled it with all class. He said, I'm never going to be one to complain about the judges. So he, Joe Lozano's a guy that he'll be around the UFC that as long as he wants to be.
No doubt. All right, okay, listen. So we came into this week saying this was all about the main card, and it really was. The main card was the class of the card. But let's just talk briefly about the prelims. Sam Alvey picking up another win, beating Kevin Casey. Sam Alvey is just something special. This dude's walking to the cage, just belting out Hey Soul Sister by Train. Cold Coffee, just take that mic off and just go get you another round of Frosty
Beverages.
That's
what I was going to get.
I know, that's fine. Can you do one for all of us?
Whose answer was that earlier this year? Stephen Wonderboy Thompson's answer when it was about who should get the next shot? It was like,
it was about CM Punk.
That's what
like,
it was.
How good is CM Punk going to do? And Stephen Wonderboy Thompson goes, we'll put that on social media later.
I'll go get some beers.
All right, you can get some Frosty Beverages. All right, Sam Alvey picked out the win for Kevin Gaethje.
Yep.
Sam Alvey, something special. The guys roll into the cage, singing "Hey Soul Sister." Not just, I mean, he's been walking out to the song for a while, which is
every fight.
Goofy enough as it is. But I mean, he's literally like singing every lyric, like "Hey Moonbeam" or whatever. I don't know. And high
five. Is this your train impression?
Along the way. Yeah, that was it. Wow, I was going to see some drops of Jupiter or something all of a sudden, but I decided against that. Did pick up the win. It was funny, though, because very patient. I mean, Sam Alvey likes to counter-strike. Kevin Casey, I think, was trying to pace himself a little bit. You know, he's had some cardio issues over the years, and you know, he's not the greatest striker necessarily to begin with, more of a jiu-jitsu stylist, so knew he was going up against a knockout artist in Sam Alvey. But it was funny to see, like, once Sam Alvey got going, it looked like he almost got angry a little bit and just like, I'm going to do this. Got the finish, 4 seconds left in the second round, very impressive. Then, of course, brought his wife, young baby, less than a month old. I mean, his wife is his corner, as we talked to him earlier this week, but he's so just complimentary of her that she knows more about MMA than he does. I mean, just one – I mean, honestly, one of the most unique characters.
His post-fight interviews are money, too.
Yeah.
They're
and
just screaming.
Got on the microphone, yelling, calling out. He wants to be on that Manchester card, as he told us ahead of time. Makes all the sense in the world. And then you guys got to talk to him in the back. Brought his wife into the scrum. I can't remember ever seeing a wife in a scrum before. Definitely not a month-old baby in a scrum before.
Mm-hmm. I can't recall anything like that. Maybe someone's brought in a coach or something, which I guess technically she is a coach to him in a way. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, not that they've had that connection. And it was unbelievable. That was one of my favorite moments of the night, just seeing them interact with each other. I asked, like, you know, she's his biggest critic apparently, and I was like, what did he do wrong tonight? He didn't win in 12 seconds, like I told him to. Just like funny stuff like
said?
That. Yeah, she's like, I told him he had to win in 12 seconds, and it was a really cool moment. We have the scrum up on the MMA Junkie YouTube page, and the story will be out and stuff tomorrow on the site. But yeah, that was a really cool moment just to see. Sam Alvey is just this crazy, unique personality, and he's a lot of fun. And his style is fun, too. I mean, sometimes we've seen a dud, like the Elias Theodoro fight. He just didn't pull the trigger. Someone needs to bring the fight to him, but every time he wins by a stoppage. He gives these amazing interviews, and he has some sort of plan laid out. I always want to fight, you know, on this card against whoever, and it's fun times, Sam Alvey.
That is good. All right, you mentioned earlier young Mike Bond, that there was a bad decision. listen, Enrique Barzola did not lose his fight. No disrespect to Kyle Bochniak. Good for him for walking away with a split decision win. But everybody I talked to had – I had this fight 30-27 for Enrique Barzola. I told you guys going into this fight I was kind of looking forward to. I like Enrique Barzola. I think he's a fun fighter to watch. Mm-hmm. You guys didn't get to watch a single minute of it because I know you guys were doing some interviews in the back.
Yeah.
I think Barzola won this fight 30-27. Gareth McClellan – loses a split decision to Alessio De Chirico, the Italian, who I thought it was kind of interesting that he got to wear the armband
mm-hmm.
While he was fighting. Italy had a massive earthquake this week. I'm not going to lie. I didn't know shit about it. But bottom line is, if it doesn't involve an MMA fight, I probably don't know anything about it because my life is essentially this whole thing. I never get to see anything else. But so I thought it was cool. But I thought it was kind of weird, too, because normally athletic commissions and stuff like that don't like that stuff. So I thought it was kind of cool that he got to do it. And this fight was a little bit sloppy. They both got a little bit tired. But it was two dudes that were trying to fight. Like, I loved it. I mean, these are not two guys that I ever expect to fight for a title.
No.
But it was fun.
Yeah, and they both – he said afterwards he talked to the commission and the UFC, and they were willing to, you know, allow him to wear the black band on his arm, which is very nice.
Cause apparently it was just black athletic tape, I guess.
Yeah, it wasn't anything, you know, particularly – it wasn't a big logo or anything like that, yeah. Which is probably why they allowed it. But, yeah, he went in there, he got the win, and you tried to talk to him a bit about it post-fight. He wasn't giving you a ton. I think maybe the language barrier is still a little bit of a struggle for him. But
it's one of those things where I love that fighters try to speak in English because they're trying to relate. But, like, when you really want deep information,
yeah.
You're like, use your translator. Use your translator.
Yeah.
It would help us out a lot.
But, I mean, we got some general info. Like, I think the one of the most affected areas was pretty close to his hometown, but he said all his family, his friends are safe. He said he drew strength from it, that he kind of thought about it in the fight, and it's what pushed him through some of those sloppy, bloody exchanges, all that stuff. Crazy. So, yeah, he got the win, and you know, it's interesting. Italy MMA, the past two events, you know, Marvin Vettori got a nice submission to open the UFC 202 card last weekend, and they're on a nice little roll here. So who knows? It's too bad for them that the Fertittas aren't around anymore, because I don't think there's many people within Zuffa that are pushing for a show in Italy anymore.
Cole
Coffey,
would you be willing to do a live event in Italy?
No. Fuck yes.
Yeah, I know. It's amazing.
I love Italy.
Felipe Silva, incredible. It was the liver shot. The liver shot just did Shane Campbell in. It finished on the ground, but that's how it was done. Chad Laprise picked up a big win over the Frenchman, Thibaut Guti. Chad Laprise did miss weight, so...
He's moving up to welterweight now, according
to
him.
Though, I can respect that. And Jeremy Kennedy picked up a unanimous decision over Alessandro. Not Alex.
Mm-hmm.
Alessandro Ricci. That was MMA Junkie and MMA Roadshow that broke that news that Alex Ricci is going to be
Alessandro.
And then calls out Artem Lobov.
Hold on,
Mark. He got the worst record in the UFC.
I mean, you know, whatever.
But then he backtracked it and made a very nice political answer about it.
A little bit, yeah. I called out Alex Caceres and Yair Rodriguez
as well.
It
was just one of the
well,
fights.
I'll either take
it was just one of those
Yair
fights.
Rodriguez, like.
Well, I think maybe one of those he knows is realistic, possibly, and then one is just completely out of his depth. Yeah. I don't think they're doing, you know, Yair Rodriguez versus
awesome.
Kennedy at this point.
That's awesome. Like, either give me the number one contender or the other guy.
Yeah.
Guess which one I'm going
to
get.
And, I mean, he brought up a point. He said, I don't think someone with Lobov's record deserves to be in the UFC, and when they signed me, I've been trying to get into the UFC for a long time
that's
as
fair.
A featherweight.
That's fair.
And he said they didn't have a roster spot for him, so that's why he got in at lightweight.
That's fair.
And he basically said, you know, I want to be at featherweight. That's my division, so give me a guy that I think doesn't deserve to be on the featherweight roster, and we can fight for the spot.
That's
so I appreciate his logic, although, you know, you're not picking the most high-hanging fruit there, exactly. No disrespect to Artem Lobov.
That was some disrespect. Fortunately, Artem Lobov, I know for a fact, only listens to the first 15 or 20 minutes of every episode. He never finishes. That's what I've heard.
This could be the one. Especially when I tweet him to tell him to look for a particular part.
Timestamp.
Beep! All right, well, listen.
That would suck if that was the only sound effects we had, which it, I guess
it is
the only
is. It pretty much is. Yeah. Bro, but I will say, I will say this, though, before we wrap things up. Cole Coffey went out on a limb, heard about the Artem Lobov call, and got Conor McGregor's reaction to the fact that his teammate was being called out by Jeremy Kennedy and shared that with the MMA Roadshow listeners.
I feel.
No. He didn't get a hold of Joanne Calderwood. He got a hold of Conor McGregor.
I must have misplaced it somewhere.
the line disconnected.
That was Conor McGregor imitating Cold Coffey of not having the audio. Okay, all right, listen.
Most unique soundbite ever.
All right, it is getting late. We got to do some quick editing, and then we got to go run to the airport and jump on a plane. It has been fun in Vancouver, that's for sure. Shit is about to get insane because I'm heading to Germany.
Shit's about to hit the fan.
Oh, it's about to hit the fan, dude. There's no doubt about it. Things are going to happen. I see what you did there with your Conor McGregor impression. Yeah, all kinds of good stuff. Listen, I do want to say something. The last couple of weeks, I've had so many people come up and tell me that they love the Roadshow, man, and ask about Cold Coffey and tell me that they love the Roadshow. And let me just say, if you're one of those people, fuck yeah, that's awesome, dude. That makes me so excited, dude, to hear that.
Language.
Sorry, man. Jason from Arizona is not going to be happy about this. no, listen, it makes me happy to be on the road and to know that, again, we could have tried to get some sleep a couple hours ago or
whatever.
I'm
still going to try to get some sleep.
No. We're not going to sleep. To do that and to just to hear some love, man, that means all everything in the world to me. So anyway, young Mike Bond, thanks for all your help this week. And I will know that I think the next time I see you is in Manchester.
Indeed.
I think everybody, as a shout out, should tweet Mike Bond and ask him about his mom.
Oh, this story is definitely coming out in another episode.
I'm just kidding. But no, for real.
No, you're giving everyone the wrong impression.
He's got to love Big Bob.
Or did we?
Thanks for listening.